My first guest today is Heather Sackett, who writes for Aspen Journalism. Thanks for stopping by and for joining me in the studio, Heather.
Yeah, thanks, Gavin.
Just in case listeners are unfamiliar with the nonprofit started by Brent Gardner-Smith, Aspen Journalism's coverage is distributed in partnership with local newspapers. Heather's latest piece is online at aspenjournalism.org. It ran in the Aspen Times late last week and is also out in print today in the Soper Sun. Before we get into that, I just want to ask you to introduce yourself. When did you start writing for Aspen Journalism? How long have you been in the Valley? And what else would you like to share about your resume?
So I have been in the Valley full time since July, but I have been freelancing for Aspen Journalism for a little bit over 2 years. So I'm kind of familiar with the Aspen, Carbondale, Crystal Valley area. And I have a long history of working in community newspapers. And so I've worked at the Telluride Daily Planet, the Littleton Independent, Denver Post. I did a short stint in public radio at KOTO Telluride.
Love it.
And so, yeah, that's a little bit about my background.
And I knew that you were writing for Aspen Journalism for quite a long time, but I didn't know that you were just recently a transplant to the Valley.
Right. Yeah. So just got here this summer. So far, I'm loving it. I spent 2 years in Boulder. I just did a master's degree at CU in their environmental journalism program. So I'm pretty happy to be back in Colorado's Western Slope, and I'm loving Carbondale and loving the Valley.
Go Buffs. I didn't realize that your reporting could be also a source of pride for CU fans.
Right. So. Yes. Yes.
Well, that's cool. The Yule Quarry in Marble is a source of pride in the history of our region, with local stone carved for the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier, the Lincoln Memorial, and the Colorado State Capitol. It's now owned by an Italian company. How many people work there these days, and what do they produce?
So about 30 to 40 people work there, and I think most of the workers are from the Delta, Paonia area, and so they quarry marble, and the marble gets put on these flatbed trucks and taken down to Delta, where that's the headquarters of Colorado Stone Quarries, and then that marble is actually sent to Italy, where they cut it up into different tiles, countertops, and then a lot of it is actually sold back to people in the U.S.,
So in October, a spill of more than 5,000 gallons of diesel fuel at the Yule Quarry in Marble halted operations. And I'm curious how this story came across your desk, Heather, and what happened exactly?
So this first came across my desk pretty soon after the spill happened, and I had heard from some people in Marble. You know, I really love Marble, and I've spent a ton of time there this summer. I was going up there hiking and trail running, and so I knew some people up there, and they told me about it, but I started making some initial phone calls, couldn't really get anywhere, didn't really find anything out until I got another tip from this guy that I cite in the story, John Armstrong, and he's with SEVEPA, and he also told me about it, and by that time, that was right after the spill report came out on November 27th. And so that's when most of the information that I used to write the story came out. And so, yeah, there's just a wealth of information in there. And, you know, don't take my word for it, but you can go to Aspen Journalism. We link to all of our documents. And so you can actually go there and read the entire 75-page report for yourself.
You mentioned CVEPA. For people who don't know, that's the Crystal Valley Environmental Protection Association, kind of a community-based organization. And so once the spill happened, I forgot to ask you to tell us. So what exactly did go down?
Okay. So for their operations up there, everything runs on generators with diesel fuel, and they have this really big tank, and then they have a smaller day tank where they fill up their machinery. So there's a 12,000-gallon tank, and then there's a smaller 100-gallon tank. And the spill was the result of the accidental overfilling of the day tank. And so normally, you know, if the day tank is accidentally overfilled, the fuel can go back into the larger tank through this return flow system. But somebody accidentally flipped this power switch from the 480-volt position to the 240-volt position, which caused the system to malfunction. And then the smaller day tank was overfilled. And then there was another sort of accident where There's a faulty pressure release cap, which should have prevented the spill like a second failsafe, but it was faulty, and so it flowed out onto the ground. And crews who initially noticed the spill, they thought it was minor. They put down some booms, but they didn't realize that there was actually 5,500 gallons missing from the bulk tank until 2 days later.
And so you write that nothing was reported to the state for 4 days, even though state law requires notification within 48 hours. It sounds like from your reporting that that's because they didn't realize how severe it was at first. Substantial cleanup efforts didn't begin for 2 weeks. And the cleanup efforts sound like they've just been one problem after another. But environment may have dodged a bullet in this case. Can you talk about how the structure of the way the layout of the land is set up may have in fact helped this spilled fuel not enter Yule Creek?
Right. Okay. So what happened in 2016 was the quarry got a permit to do this major expansion. It's a 114-acre expansion, and they have to reroute this access road so that they can get to some of those other areas that have the marble stone in it. And so as part of that permit, they got permission to divert Yule Creek. And so actually above where the spill happened, the creek has been diverted around this small ridge. And so now, the ridge separates the creek from the spill. So, you know, just ironically, inadvertently, the creek was spared from this potential environmental damage.
And in terms of the quarry shutting down, they were closed for 2 months and have now reopened. Is that right?
Yes. Yeah. I just spoke with a spokesperson from the quarry, and they said it has been reopened. It reopened late last week, and so operations are back up and running. But yeah, it was closed for nearly 2 months.
That's probably a pretty big hit for them. Sounds like in theory, the spill is not going to be a big problem in terms of the Crystal River or where that creek would run. But it does also sound like the we're not completely out of the woods yet, that there's still going to be monitoring and there could be other issues in terms of groundwater. Is that right?
Right. Yeah. So the quarry has hired an environmental cleanup agency. They're out of Grand Junction. And so they are going to be digging some monitoring wells and doing ongoing testing for the coming months.
And then how did you get information about the state level? So who did you reach out to at the state agency level, and what was their response?
So the main jurisdiction or the main agency that has jurisdiction over this is the Division of Reclamation, Mining and Safety. And so they are the ones who are kind of overseeing the cleanup and everything. And I also reached out to the Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment. And since it didn't hit Yule Creek, they are not really, you know, they're not really involved. And then I also reached out to Colorado Parks and Wildlife, and they did go up there and inspect the site. And they said, you know, they didn't find any dead fish or anything like that. But, you know, since it doesn't seem to have affected wildlife, they are also not involved. So really, it's the state Division of Reclamation, Mining and Safety that's kind of overseeing this whole thing.
And then you quote in your article from a prepared statement released by Colorado Stone Quarries, the Delta-based company. Was that statement sent specifically in response to your own request for comment?
Yes, that was. So it's my understanding that they hired a PR firm when I started asking questions. And so that came directly from them. And then it's also my understanding that the quarry sent that same press release that they sent to me. They sent it to the Town of Marble officials the day before my story came out so that they were aware, too.
And so then since your story came out in Aspen Journalism, in the Aspen Times, and now today in the Soper Sun, have you heard from anyone else in the community or from anyone else at the regulatory level or at the industry level?
You know, I haven't really. I guess I got a few emails from community members saying like, oh, thanks for this reporting. I didn't know about this. But actually not, you know, I personally haven't heard much of a response.
And in terms of your work in Aspen journalism more broadly, it must be cool to know that you can do reporting from one location that then is read by people who want to know what's going on, you know, in these different outlets that Aspen journalism stories run. But this seems like one of the first times where it's really hit close to home here in this valley. And I mean, you do a lot of stories about the valley, don't get me wrong, but it seems like this one, you know, really caught people's attention because in some, you know, many of the stories you do are sort of dry or technical or, you know, environmental reporting. But this one really was like, hey, this is a thing everyone's really proud of and nobody knew this happened.
Right. Yeah, I think, you know, it's really interesting because we have currently, we're hoping to expand, but we currently have a water desk and an environment desk. And I think this story kind of bridged the two. There's elements from both of those. And in terms of it being in, so this story ran in the Aspen Times, the Glenwood Springs Post-Independent, and then the Soper Sun. And just a quick note about Aspen journalism is that, so we're a nonprofit and we operate under a Creative Commons license. So once it goes up on our website, anybody can take it and run it. So, you know, while we are local news and we focus on mostly stories in the Valley, this story could, you know, anyone who wants to republish it absolutely could.
Well, it's really nice to meet you, Heather. And while we're out of time for today, I just want to thank you for your important work and for speaking with KD&K. And I think for people who have still not kind of caught on to what Aspen journalism is doing, it's very clear at the end of the year that when people are thinking about how to support KD&K and the Soper Sun and, you know, our local journalism efforts, Aspen journalism is definitely one that needs to be on people's radar. And I hope that people will check it out, aspenjournalism.org. Thanks again, Heather.
Yes, thanks for having me, Gavin.